You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back, Locked On Jets podcast, Friday, February 22nd, 2019. I'm John B. from GangreneNation.com. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Well, if you're a regular listener of the show or you read what I have to say on GangreneNation.com, you might be familiar with my dad because I frequently share his thoughts after games on our phone calls, thoughts he has on the team, thoughts he has from games. Today I wanted to introduce you to my dad. My dad's been a Jets fan for decades. He was a season ticket holder on Shea Stadium, so he's with us here today. Let's welcome him in. Dad, welcome to the show. So I've never heard the story. How did you become a Jets fan?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me, John. I became a Jets fan in 1978. It just had come through with Lou Holtz had left, and they gave the job to Walt Michaels. And being in New York, you kept up on it. I was kind of rooting for the Rams at that point because I wanted to root for a winning team. And just something about Walt Michaels, getting the job, having hung in there, and they were a young team, and they beat the Dolphins. And I was starting my career, and it seems like we were all together. I still have identity with the Jets, and so I never really rooted for a New York team, and so that's how I got to the Jets.
So what were your impressions of the Jets before you rooted for them, like during the Holtz era?
You know, it was pretty much a clown show. It was kind of funny. Some of the stories I had read is that he came in with this college mentality, and he wrote a fight song for the Jets that he wanted them to sing after every victory. He wanted Joe Namath to lead them. And then he tried to put the wishbone in on the goal line with Joe Namath, and that was a disaster. And so then when they get inside the 10-yard line, he put Richard Todd in and benched Joe Namath. And it was just a horror show for the most part. And you could tell he was miserable. And he was getting ready. You could tell he had packed it in. And so, for coming off of that, and again, see, Walt Michaels had lost the job, first of all, to a guy named Charlie Winter. Weeb was the coach. And then when Weeb was done and realized he couldn't win another Super Bowl, he left. And everybody kind of thought Walt Michaels was the next in line. But Weeb fixed it that Charlie Winter would get the job because that was his son-in-law. And Charlie Winter was a paragon of mediocrity. I think they had a 7-7 year, 1 year, and then he wasn't the solution, and so they went to Holtz, and then Walt Michaels. That's what happened. I always liked Walt Michaels. In fact, I think Walt Michaels is probably the best coach I've known in my time as rooting for the Jets.
Do you have any memories from the Namath days?
You know, just Super Bowl III, I think, is the biggest one, and the other one was when he came back from his injury. He had gotten hurt in an exhibition game, I think in 1970, 71, somewhere in that era. And he was out for over a year. And they were going nowhere because the team was built on the thought that he would have one more big year and they were going to catch lightning in the bottle and go back to the Super Bowl. But so they really didn't do anything to build the team. They really believed that they could go there on his arm. And he was out, and then they kept him out, and then he came back against the 49ers. And they were down by a couple of touchdowns, and he rallied them. And they were going towards for the third touchdown, and he got picked off by, I think, a guy named Bruce Taylor, who I know because my aunt kept reminding me that he went to Perth Amboy High School where she worked. And that was a very memorable day. Other than the Super Bowl, I think that's the second most memorable day of the Namath era.
So you had tickets at Shea Stadium, right?
I did. I had tickets at Shea Stadium. And I started going in 1981, the year they went back to the playoffs. I remember going to the last game of the year. It was against the Packers. And the scenario had to be... what happened is that neither the Jets or the Giants had been very good for a long time. And the Giants played the Cowboys on a Saturday, and they won. And then it was really unique that the fate of both teams rested with the Jets. Jets played the Packers. If the Jets lost, they were not going to get in as a wild card. And if the and the Giants were not going to get in as a wild card. So everything held was on the Jets. And that was a day in Shea Stadium. You know, if you remember the old Shea Stadium, the wind off Flushing Bay could be, you know, really incredible. And two things hit my mind of great confidence, probably the most confident I've ever been going into a Jet game. Because first of all, I looked at Lynn Dickey trying to throw in the warm-ups. And I thought to myself, if he's even going to get a pass off, it's not going to go anyplace because he doesn't know how to handle this wind. And I think they sacked him like six times that game. And they beat him 28-3, as I remember. And I remember the guy we went with, guy got us the tickets. He stopped off and he got a bottle of champagne. And we went back to my parents' house. And my brother and he and I and had a bottle of champagne. And my father drank, but he was a Giant fan, so he drank for the Giants.
Any other good memories from Shea Stadium?
They had some characters there. There were some real characters. There was the guy known as Charlie the Sailor. He was an old guy, and he had these gaps in his buttons. And he would sit. He was like at the theater, you know, these seat fillers. He would like run in and fill seats for people or offer to go buy beers for people just so he could sit in their seats. Then there was this other obnoxious guy that sat behind us. And I remember when they beat the Packers, as the clock's ticking down, this guy who was always screaming stuff, he stands up, he's put both arms in the air, and he's yelling, "We're going to the effing playoffs. We're going to the effing playoffs." That's back when that word was really taboo. You know, you just didn't say it in polite society. So that was it. And then I was at the last Shea Stadium game, which was just a disaster. It was coming off of the 1983 year, which was supposed to be the Super Bowl year. They had gotten rid of Walt Michaels and brought in Joe Walton, the offensive genius, who changed all the plays in 1986, but we won't get into that. And they had a very disappointing year. They played the Steelers. It was Bradshaw's last game, as a matter of fact. Bradshaw threw two touchdowns. The second one, you saw him holding his elbow. And he never played another game. But it was horrible, is that people at that point had been drinking a lot. It was a Saturday game, I remember. People were ripping the chairs out. And it was just horrible. It was not the way you would, not a pleasant memory for leaving Shea Stadium.
And did you keep tickets into the Meadowlands, or did you give them up then?
No, I gave them up then. You know, my life has changed a little bit. And I had met who would become your mother. And we were going towards, you know, thinking about a life together. And so, and plus, you know, I tell you something, the thing about having tickets every week is, you know, it almost becomes a burden year after year that you have to go or find somebody to take the ticket. So I decided that, you know, I was going to give the tickets up, but I would still follow the Jets.
What was the best game you saw at Shea?
The best game I saw at Shea, I think, has to be the one that put him into the playoffs. They just, everything clicked. I think Richard Todd threw a couple touchdown passes. The Jets had gone to, the thing, it was just the beginning of Air Coryell. So the Jets drafted this guy who was a track star at Texas, Johnny Lamb Jones. And they had Wesley Walker. And the guy I would go with, I remember two things about him. He kept saying, "I don't see how they can lose. They got Johnny Lamb Jones and Wesley Walker." And the other guy that I remember, why don't you ask me the worst player the Jets have ever seen?
Who's the worst player the Jets have ever seen?
Oh, that question was Donald Dykes. I'm telling you right now, I sat up in the upper mezzanine in the right end zone, in the corner of the end zone. And even at my seat, I was closer to the receivers than Donald Dykes ever was as their defensive back.
What's your favorite Jets memory outside of that one game?
Without a doubt, being the Giants in 1988. That knocked the Giants out of the playoffs. The Jets were 7-7-1. The Giants were going to win. And this local guy, Mike Francesa, who's just a shill for the Giants, he did the pregame show. He goes, "I'm telling you, Phil Simms will win this game. The Jets have no chance." And it was 20-21. And you were watching the game with me, though you don't remember it. And I thought it was late in the game, and I thought it was a third down, and I thought to myself, okay, good, we're running this into the line. We're going to let Leahy kick the field goal, and we're going to win it. And all of a sudden, Ken O'Brien goes back to pass, and I yelled, "No, no, no, yes!" And he threw a touchdown pass. I don't remember who caught the ball. And I remember I swept you up off the ground, and I was dancing around with you, and your mother thought for sure I deserved to be in an insane asylum. And I kept saying, we beat the Giants. We beat the Giants. And I'll tell you, next to winning the Super Bowl, I think that's probably the greatest thrill, was knocking the Giants out of the playoffs in 1987. Or 88, something around that time.
I think I know the answer to this, but what's your worst memory?
Oh, God. Oh, I haven't, you know, haven't thought about this because the details are a little sketchy. It's December 3rd, 1987, against the Cleveland Browns at about 4:30 p.m. with 4 minutes and 21 seconds to go in the game. Freeman McNeil went around at the right end to put the Jets up 20-10, which would put them in the championship game the next week in Denver. And they were up 20-10, and then they held on four downs. And on the third down, Mark Gastineau roughed Bernie Kosar, gave them a life. They went down and scored. The Jets couldn't score and couldn't move the ball again. And they punted, and they punted the ball, and they had the Browns down inside of the two. But Marion Barber jumped offside, so they had to repunt the ball. And they punted the ball. I forget the guy's name, Jennings. He punted the ball in the end zone. They drove down, kicked the field goal that tied it. They then lost it overtime. And other than that, those are the sketchy things that I remember about that loss. And to this day, that is the worst loss I've ever had as a Jet fan. In fact, I got to tell you something. I don't think I've rooted with the Jets with the intensity that I have ever since that day. I just know they're going to find a way to break my heart.
Then they followed with, you know, Coslett and Pete Carroll and Kotite and all those.
You know, again, the guy Mike Francesa said it best about Bruce Coslett, and I'll do it in the Francesa voice. The problem with Bruce Coslett is he talked 600 percentage, but his winning percentage was 400. Coslett had, Coslett had 2-8-8 years. The last one, they were 8-5. They beat the Washington Redskins 3-0.
3-0, I remember that.
And then they had to win one of their last three games. They played Dallas, who blew them out.
I remember that game, yeah. And then they pouring rain.
Then they go up to Buffalo in a game that the Bills had nothing to play for because they had clinched home field. And they got it. It was 14-13 late in the game. It was a terrible cold game, I remember. They were on the road. Drove them down. They set it up, and I forget the kicker's name.
Kerry Blanchard.
Kerry Blanchard. I think he went on to kick some big kick for somebody else. Kerry Blanchard missed the field goal.
Missed three. I think he missed three kicks that game.
He did. He missed three. And then they went into Houston, and the Jets were somewhat part of television history. Because that was nice. The Jets were playing Houston, and they had Houston again had nothing to play for. Parcells had gone to New England, and he had they beat the Dolphins, which opened the door to the Jets.
Right, because they needed that Jets Houston game was like a Sunday night.
Yes, it was a Sunday night game,
and the Jets needed like things to break right for them in the afternoon, and everything broke right.
That's right. So they're playing. They're down 14-0, and Kevin Gilbright, for whatever, the offensive coordinator of the Oilers, calls a pass play, and Warren Moon gets sacked, and he fumbles. The Jets recover. Now, the year before, the Oilers had lost the game in Buffalo. They'd blown the 32-point lead. So they hired Buddy Ryan as their defensive coordinator, and he's so pissed off at Gilbright that he passed. You see Gilbright and Buddy Ryan on TV swinging at each other, and so the Jets were part of TV history. The Jets ended up losing, I think, like 35-3 or something like that. And that was the end of Bruce Coslett in New York. That was the end of Bruce Coslett. Pete Carroll was, he was a disaster. They never recovered. Pete Carroll's tenure was
the
fake spike game with Dan Marino. They then went to Rich Kotite, who people thought was a great upgrade. It was. You know, I remember when he got hired. They said to Mr. Hess, why are you hiring? Why did you fire Pete Carroll after 1 year? And he had a famous line, I'm 87 years old, and I want to have some fun with this team. And he didn't, nor did any of us. We went to, I think, a 3-13, then they drafted Keyshawn, and they signed Neil O'Donnell. And people that rooted for the Steelers told me, boy, what a stupid move that was. And I couldn't believe it. And then they ended up going 1-15. The one thing that really moved me was the Jets had, and unfortunately he's passed away, a defensive tackle named Dennis Byrd. And Dennis Byrd was, Dennis Byrd got hurt. He broke his neck in the game. And, the next week they played up in Buffalo, and there's only one or two times Mr. Hess ever went in to dress the team. And Mr. Hess went in and talked to the team before that game, and they beat the Bills right after that game for Dennis Byrd. I always thought Dennis Byrd should have been brought back as a commentator for the Jets or kept in the Jets family, though maybe he wanted to go back to Oklahoma. I'm not too sure. The other time the first time Mr. Hess spoke to the team, apparently, was before the Giant game in 1993. And he went in there and famously said, we don't want to look like a bunch. I'm tired of us looking like a bunch of horses' asses. I want to win this game. I'll tell you, the other big game in Jet history, and the Jets, if you ask any of the Jets about the 69 team, they will tell you that the real championship game for them was not the Super Bowl in January. It was in August when they played the Giants in the Yale Bowl. That was their real world championship game, because people in New York, O-line Giant fans, just were very dismissive, even though the Jets won. They viewed it as a fluke.
Let's not fast forward past 20 years of Jets history, but how many wins do you think the Jets get in 2019?
I'm very optimistic. I think with the free agency, with the draft point, and with the quarterback, and the new coach and the new defensive coordinator, I think, and plus having the balanced schedule, you know, getting a better schedule, don't be surprised they don't win 10 games, because that's been a history of Jet coaches in the last couple of things, going from Herm to Mangini to Rex to Todd Bowles. Take a look.
Yeah, they all have great first years.
They all have great first years, and then after that, it's all I think 10 wins. Every one of them has 10 wins, I think, or Herm maybe had 9.
I think Rex had 9, but they had the playoff
run. Yeah, they had the playoff run to the finals, so, I mean, you know, that's where I think they'll be.
All right, well, thanks for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Listen, take care of yourself, and go Jets.
That's all for our show today. Thanks for tuning in. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoyed the show, subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. Leave the show a good review in iTunes. Have a great weekend, everybody. We will see you next week.